This was a long time coming, Shell, with the rising numbers of kids on the autism spectrum. This show is more important today than ever. On the show, you're going to hear from a superhero mom, Allison Bird, who does have a degree in clinical pharmacy, but this is a superhero mom with the greatest degree of all, healing an autistic child, bringing a child through autism from pain to purpose. As a matter of fact, you're going to hear how she did it. You're going to hear even the key supplements that were really important in this journey. You're going to hear about how she even, what she discovered and how she did the brain detox. And you're also going to hear how she even talked to our group of doctors at my seminar just 2 weeks ago. Wait to hear this interview. And this is one, I keep saying this, but it's true. You're going to want to share this with many people because by 2032, it's estimated that one out of two kids are going to be on the autism spectrum. So this is one we need to get out. I'll see you on the episode. For a long time, I've been wanting to bring this episode to you because I believe that it brings hope in a modern day epidemic of autism in the autism spectrum. And with me is Allison Bird, mom of Xander, and you are in fact a clinical pharmacist. And you know, have had some experience working somewhat in the area, at least of healthcare, but who has experience with autistic children? But now you do. The most important role that you do have right now is you are the mom of Xander and the mom that got Xander well. So that's really the topic today. So Allison, welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, look, I am pleased to bring this show because I have been inundated, you know, with the autism spectrum. Let me talk about the statistic just to give people an idea of how important this topic is and the fact that there is a solution, but who's hearing about it. By 2032, it's estimated that one in two children are going to be on the autism spectrum. And that seems hard to believe. But when you look at what's happening, and by the way, that's if things stay the same, and it seems that they are, you know, but when you look at what's happening right now, with the perfect storm of neurotoxicity in our children, then that statistic doesn't seem as absolutely incredible. So Allison, I want to start just with the story here because Xander, when you all came to me, you had actually done a lot of work up to that. So kind of start off just by telling the story so people can understand where you were, you know, and where you are now ultimately is where we're going to get to.
Right. So I thought I'd start right at the very beginning and say that he was a C-section baby, and it was an unfortunate thing, but I was told that was the only way he was going to come out, and he missed out on all that good sort of microflora in the birth canal. But when I started to think about that, I thought, well, that's not really the first start of his toxicity issues. You kind of really have to then look at me, because what's in the mother's in the child. Yeah. And unfortunately, he inherited a lot of my toxicity issues. So just to briefly cover it, I grew up in the 70s and I was a child then. So there was lead in the gasoline and lead in my toys and lead in the paint. And on top of that, I had a lot of amalgam fillings, and they were actually placed in me when I was a teenager. I had 12 amalgam fillings put in. Some of them were proper fillings, and some of them were actually supposed to be preventative to stop me getting bigger cavities, which is horrific when you think about it. Anyway, by the time, so that was about 12, 13, I had that done. By the time I was 19, I was completely hypothyroid, but couldn't get anybody to take me seriously. And it wasn't until I was in my 30s that I was actually diagnosed. So I had years struggling with hypothyroidism, with just nobody taking me seriously. So anyway, getting back to Xander. So unfortunately, he had inherited a lot of my mercury from my amalgam fillings. I still had 12 amalgam fillings in when I was pregnant. And also he had a lot of the lead, and we'll come to that kind of later in the story. Anyway, despite those toxicities already in him, he was born a normal, healthy, wonderful baby. I can remember we went to England when he was about 8, 9 months, And he was sitting around the dinner table and he was laughing and he was starting engaging in a clapping game with everybody around the table. So you would clap and then he would clap and he would mimic you. And it was hilarious to him. And then out of the blue, my father said, "Oh, look at this kid. He's so engaged. He's got so much eye contact. He will never be autistic. Look at him." And then, unfortunately, those words like haunt me. Mm. At 4 years old, we were dealing with a kid with sensory processing disorder and high functioning autism. And just to give your viewers an idea of kind of what that's like, the sensory stuff is very difficult. He was very sound sensitive, so everything made him do this. He couldn't even be around sharp objects. I had to hide scissors. I had to hide anything that's pointy and sharp. He was just so afraid of everything. Clothing was a problem. And he was afraid of food because of the textures. He really couldn't deal with different textures, which makes their diet so narrow. It's very, very difficult to try and get healthy foods into them. Then from just how he was behavioral-wise, he threw huge temper tantrums. He couldn't transition from one thing to another. He had difficulty sleeping. He just lived in a state of high anxiety. He was just miserable. You never could predict what was going to set him off. Just leaving the house was a big ordeal for him and for us. He was in a bad place. At four, I decided that I needed to try and do something to heal him. I did start very gently with some chiropractic care. I did some homeopathy, but I really kind of wasn't gaining a lot of traction. And eventually I decided that I'd do some functional medicine testing. And I found that he had just huge, huge levels of lead. I've got one of the examples of the test here.
Yeah, I was actually looking for your file. I wanted to actually show the before and after.
That big line is that was his lead.
Yeah.
Right in the red there.
And by the way, I want to point out that that's a urine challenge, where we challenge out of the body. And you typically won't, especially on these cases, you won't see the mercury because the mercury is in the brain. And without biopsy, we're not going to see it. But we do see other metals like the lead. And the lead is, you're able to consistently test the lead. Whereas even if we see mercury in the first test, we can make that go away in a couple months. But the problem is it's still in the brain. But his lead was bad. And along with, we knew he had brain mercury just because of the history from your amalgam fillings, which, by the way, that's a big deal, right? You had said that. The DRESS study shows the number of fillings, ladies, in your mouth is proportional to how much is the baby's brain. And then, of course, vaccination, et cetera, the perfect storm occurs. So
finding that huge lead level, I thought, well, I think this is going to be key to getting him well. I'd done enough research to know that having high lead levels was definitely associated with all sorts of behavioral problems. And so I embarked on a standard chelation program, which is commonly used, which is a DMSA twice a day for 3 days on, 11 days off. It's a common protocol, but it's not a good one. He got worse and worse and worse on this program. And we know now the reason is that you're not dosing within the half-life of the DMSA. And so you cause a lot of redistribution of those metals. And that was just making his symptoms a lot, lot worse. So I thought, well, I have to find another solution. And I came across the Andy Cutler protocol, which is a lot safer way to detox.
Yeah, right.
And because you're dosing in the half-life. But that means that you have to dose DMSA and ALA, alpha-lipoic acid, in every 3 hours, and that's through the day and then 4 hours through the night. So that requires you to wake up, your child wakes up, and give them repeated doses through the night to continue the cycle and stop the redistribution. I will say on this protocol, he did get a little bit better.
And I know this because you're using a chelator correctly. It does make a difference.
But I did it for 11 months, every weekend, three days on, 4 days off, every weekend for 11 months. And he had made progress, but at the end of it, I was just completely exhausted. He was completely exhausted. And I thought there's got to be another way of doing this. I knew that I had to still get his lead down, and I'd done another test and it was still high. I will say that, should we talk about the doing the test wrong? Because what's standardly done is you give a big dose of DMSA and then you collect the urine, and that's it. That's the it for most people. But that causes a massive amount of redistribution. And I had tried this with him, and he had got hugely worse after a big DMSA challenge. So what we recommend is to continue dosing with the DMSA for at least 3 days after you do that challenge to stop that happening. And we've since done heavy metal challenges, and it works perfectly if you keep doing that dosing. Back to the story. So I searched the internet and I came across Dr. Pomper, and I just felt like a connection with your story, because I knew that you dealt with lead in your family, you dealt with mercury for yourself, and you dealt with autism as well. And I just felt like such a resonance with your story and what was going on in my story. And then I started researching your science behind what you do and how holistic it was. And there was things that I had never heard, things about like the inflammation in the membrane. This was new to me and made so much sense. So I kind of just knew in my heart that this was the path I really wanted to go down with him. So we started to work together. And there's a lot to it. We didn't just do chelation. Within a month, we saw some difference in him. Within 2 months, we were getting like eye contact back. Within 3 months, we were getting much, much better behavior. And then at 4 months, we had a teacher's conference, and she was saying that from where we'd started earlier in the year, where he couldn't sit still, he couldn't bear to be on the floor, he couldn't work with anybody, he would have temper tantrums all the time, he would have to go and sit in the principal's office to calm down, he would cry under the table, he was just so difficult to manage, to this latest conference at 4 months, where she said she had nothing negative to say about his behavior. He was sitting at his desk quietly, he was helping others, he was interacting with the class, he wasn't throwing fits and having temper tantrums. Just an amazing turnaround, very, very quickly. And really, from then, he's done just continues to do well. Yes, we're still continuing to claim, because we know that there's still just so much in him. But he continues to grow, blossom. Occasionally, we hit a bad detox cycle. Generally, you know, we get through things, we manage it. It's been an amazing journey to see where he is to where he is now. And he's just starting to live as a normal, happy boy. I mean, he went on a sleepover. Things that I couldn't dream for him like 2 years ago. He's starting to do normal stuff. So it's an amazing story, and I really just want to give people hope and tell them that this is something they can do, and this is achievable.
I got to see him for the first time, actually. I hear my echo. I'm not sure why, but it was you all came on a little vacation here in Park City. And, you know, I was helping you all, you know, via the phone or, you know, so I really Skype, you know, phone, whatever was available. But Then when I saw him in person, I mean, he came up to me, hugged me and cried. As a matter of fact, I told the story at my seminar because you were gracious enough to tell the story at my last seminar. And, you know, he didn't want to let go of me. He was crying. I was going out the door. And by that time I'm crying and I get home and Marilee's like, what happened to you? I'm like, you have no idea what happened to me. And I was like, I met Xander. You know, she knew I was going to meet Xander, but she didn't know just how amazing he was. And she didn't know how amazingly emotional he was going to get because he saw me and he thanked me. And I mean, looked me in the eyes and, you know, thanked me just for giving his life back. And I was like, oh my God, I just didn't expect that. I just wasn't ready for that. You know, it's like, so, and needless to say, you know, he's the sweetest kid in the world. Matter of fact, you have some pictures. Because I like to say, if you met him, you would never know. You would never know where he came from or what he's been through. So, you know, go through, show some of the pictures.
So I wanted to show the first picture of him. So this is actually in Scotland, and he's looking out at a lake. And I just kind of like the symbolism here, because we just started on our journey. I just started a collation with him. And he, you know, he was 7 years old at the time. And I just think it's kind of, I felt like the journey is kind of like you heading out off onto a lake or an ocean, and you're just on a little sailboat and it doesn't seem that you're getting very far, but you've just got to keep going. And there's things that knock you off, you know, your course, but you've got to keep steering. And then maybe at 6 months, you'll look back and you'll see how far you've come. And like, you just got to keep going, and maybe you'll hit some like rocky waters. Maybe you'll have a bad cycle, but you just keep steering yourself, and eventually you'll see landfall, you'll see the other side, and you just keep going. And that's kind of how I see it in my head, the journey and how it happened. I will say that I do want to thank my family, because obviously, they took a lot of faith in me, that I just felt this was right. So this is with his sister, Sophie. And I will say that Sophie is one of the sweetest, most loving souls, very, very nurturing. And she was always somebody that would help talk him down, calm him, try and soothe him. She was there by his side always, just trying to rescue him from bad situations. I mean, she was just a wonderful, wonderful sister. He couldn't have really had a better sister at all. And they love each other so much. They play and they tease, but they just love each other completely. So he was so lucky to have her as a sister.
Was that that picture there in Park City?
Yeah, that's at Park City. Yeah, yeah. And I kind of do want to say that, you know, my husband, although at first when I told him, you know, I wanted to do this pulling out the lead, and he saw him got a lot worse, he was a little skeptical. Was I on the right path? But I think I'd learned to convince him that, you know, the science is good. I know that I just feel that this is something I have to do. And I, you know, when I came across your work, I said, look, no, the science is so good. The science is so good. He then felt that he had to support me. And, you know, it's not easy dealing with a challenging child. Mm. But it takes patience, and it takes all of us to kind of to deal with it and to make things happen. We still made Xander try and do things that he wasn't comfortable with, to try and give him exposure, even when, you know, he would have been happier in at home in his bed, hiding from the world. So kind of making him, you know, do other things and go to the park, or, you know, ride his bike, you know.
The pictures remind me of this. It's funny because Dylan's home right now, but this is Dylan when shortly after we got him, and you can just see in the picture, he's not right. and then, gosh, if he was out there, I should really go drag him in here, because just like Xander, if you met Dylan, He has his own business now. He lives in San Diego. He just happens to be home now visiting, but you would never know it. You would never know he was on the autism spectrum. So there's two cases, right? There's hope. You know, and I have to say, you know, like, let's talk a little bit about Xander. Because, you know, with Dylan, a lot of the membrane work, I really dug deep in that work with Dylan because I saw the progress, you know, when I was really digging into it. And I saw things start to click, his brain started to function when we started into the membrane work. And one of the topics of the last seminar, Allison, that you were just at is we spent a whole day talking about the cell membrane and why fixing the cell membrane is a critical part of turning certain genes off. But it's also a critical part of how you detox the cell. And, you know, but then the brain phase is just huge. You know, how long has Xander been in a brain phase now?
I would say, it depends because I did the Andy Cutler protocol before. So at least 2 years. Mm-hmm. If you when I was doing ALA and DMSA then as well. But at least 2 years. And I mean, I'm still going to continue with it.
Exactly.
I feel like, you know, there's still work to be done. So I do see symptoms in him a little bit. He gets more anxious and angry when he's going through a growth spurt. I think we've discussed this before. It's likely the lead is coming out. You know, I still feel there's some work still to be done there. But, I mean, I think that some of our success, because I'd already done some chelation, I think that our success very early on was to do with the fats and the membrane work. And yeah. I think that was the key to just making things happen very, very quickly with him. I mean, I think you need both.
Yeah, you need both, right. I mean, that's the point is, you know, Andy Cutler, he uses the chelator correctly, but you have to go upstream to the cell. You have to fix the cell, upregulate cell function. That is where real detox is, combined with using binders correctly. And we'll talk about cytodetox for him too, because that became a game changer for him, even to the point where we didn't have to give ALAs more frequently. You know, so let's kind of give some of those pointers. So adding the cellular work to Xander with the chelation, you know, became a big deal. But we also learn, and one of my things I always say is my goal is to teach the person the process, right? And you were just at my seminar, you spent some time with my doctors talking about dosing and things of that nature, because you learned a lot through this process. And with your background, it really, you know, was a blessing, I know, to the doctors there, you know, because with kids, you know, it can be really difficult at times. But, you know, my goal is always to teach the person the process, so they're able to do it. So you learned it very well. So talk about some of those things, because we would learn with Xander that, you know, he would have trouble actually when he came off a cycle. So kind of weaning down the dosing ended up to be a little magic. Talk a little bit about that.
Okay, so I mean, one of the biggest difference from the Andy Cutler protocol was the addition of the cytodetox. And that allowed us to get away without dosing in the middle of the night. So I still dose every 3 hours during the day on Saturday and Sunday, because I want to get as large a dose as I can of the alpha lipoic acid in him. But
talk about that schedule, you know how you do it with the school.
The schedule is that I always start with the high dose alpha lipoic acid for 2 days, starting on a Saturday at the weekend. So I start Saturday, early Saturday morning, and then we start doing every 3 hours. Sometimes I squish it to every 2.5 hours if I'm trying to get extra doses in through the day. And then I stop and wait usually an hour before I'll give the bind. But during that schedule, I'll be giving 3 lots of doses of the cytodetox to carry him through the night, so I don't have to wake up and give that nighttime dose. And that was life-changing for me. Those 2 days are his high dose days. And after that, I can then get away with just giving the alpha lipoic acid 3 times a day. So maybe 6 hours apart. during when he's back at school. So I give it before he goes, the minute he comes home, and then kind of in the evening.
Monday that works because he's back in school. Saturday and Sunday, you're able to give it to him more often, which minimizes the symptoms. One of the rules that we teach and follow. And then Monday, spreading it out, it worked.
Yeah. And so, I then can get away with just three lots of dosing for the alpha-lipoic acid during the week. So I continue with that for a couple of days. And then I stop the alpha-lipoic acid and give him another couple of days of cytodetox on its own without the alpha-lipoic acid. And then slowly wean that dose down and then stop. And he handles that dosing schedule very well, without symptoms. And I think that was key. You dose high at the beginning when you can frequently dose, but the cyto helps to mop everything up. And that's been a wonderful solution to this problem.
So the cytodetox, just for those listening, it's a really solid binder, and it works in the cell membranes, and it makes sure that things go all the way out of the body, and it lasts a little longer in the body, so it cleans up. So the ALA, on the other hand, it's fat soluble. We use that to go into the brain to get that inorganic mercury that's so hard to get, that we have to get function back. But by itself, ALA doesn't do a great job of making sure it goes all the way out of the body. And it has to be dosed frequently. But when we put it with the cyto, you definitely get less redistribution. And that gives us the opportunity to dose it a little less frequently, which makes it a lot easier. So, but, your point, though, as you can see, we started with much lower doses than he's able to do now. We start micro-dosing, if you will. And then as time goes on, you're able to dose things higher. As time goes on, you're able to adjust the schedules. But in the beginning, it was just a few drops of cytodetox was setting them, a few milligrams of ALA. It's all we could do.
Yeah. So, you build it up, and you've got to be aware that you're pulling out metals, and so you're going to get symptoms. But you want them to be tolerable. So you have to gradually increase the dose to a point where you are effective in pulling out the metals, but still it's a tolerable cycle to be on. And he does better on cycles sometimes than he would do. If I see that he's a bit symptomatic, I will put him straight on a cycle and he gets better. It's metals coming out of him.
Yeah. I remember that from my own experience. I've said this in other shows. My wife would tell me when it was time to start chelating again, irritability, lack of sleep, those things, time to start. In a kid, you start noticing, right? You're the one going, okay, it's time to start a schedule. No doubt the body, the mercury, the lead, et cetera, will start to move out of those deeper tissues. And starting a cycle just clears it out. The goal is to teach people the process, because it is different for everyone. The dosing is different. The cycle lengths are different for everyone. How you wean down is different for everybody. You discover this, and we don't start in the brain phase. The brain phase is where it's needed to get, these cases like this well, but we have to start in a prep phase. We have to start in a body phase and then work to the brain phase. And the brain phase, it's years, not months. Like you said, 2 years already. And you're not going to stop anytime soon. I did it consistently for 2 years, more on and off a little bit after that for another 2 years. And I still do them to this day. I just finished one not that long ago. So, this is a process that works when you put it around the cellular healing components that we discussed a little bit, obviously makes all the huge difference. But look, I have to say, that there's, the diet plays a role. I always say, look, you or your child aren't going to get well from the diet, but you won't get well without paying attention to the diet, right? I mean, because we have to get the toxins out of the brain, obviously, and the diet itself won't do that. However, you won't get well without the diet. So talk a little bit about that, because that could be some of the greatest challenges for people listening.
It is, particularly when you're dealing with a sensory kid, because they've narrowed what they're willing to eat down to just a few things. So some of it was bargaining. So what his diet looks like is that he is gluten-free, he is strictly non-GMO, and I incorporate a lot of fats into his diet as much as I can get. So I did do the gluten-free, casein-free diet with him before we met. I did it for 6 months, and he actually got a little worse on it. But partly that was because when I was doing it way back when, there was a lot of soy in things that you would use as substitutes.
And the gluten-free stuff is crap, and so many parents go gluten-free and go to these gluten-free substitutes, and they're crap.
Yes, no, I know. And I think also I probably fell into that before I realized I really had to be gluten-free, non-GMO, like clean gluten-free. And so he does have some dairy now, but I try to make sure it's organic, grass-fed, and high fat. Like he doesn't drink milk, but, you know, I will, you know, give him ghee and butter and maybe some kefir. And I think so part of it was to try and persuade him to have the healthy fats, which was a struggle. You know, he didn't like the texture. I do have an aid. This was my savior. It's a container that you can't see through. It's stainless steel, and you can get a top for it with a silicone straw. And he can't see it. He can't smell it. He can only taste it. And if you keep it cold enough, you can keep the taste down. And this was my key to getting the fats into him, to getting fiber into him, everything. Smoothies with like this container where he couldn't see it was like, it was amazing. This worked so well.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about the fats. You know, one of the first things that I do when I get people, and I don't even know if this was the case, it was so long ago for you all, but I take people off their fish oil. Was he on fish oil when you came to me?
He was.
Yeah. Yeah. And typically in the beginning, maybe people think it's working, but when we take them off, you get a lot less stimming. You see a big difference because at the seminar, we had Professor Peskin speaking about the dangers of fish oil and why it's oxidized and why it kicks out important fats out of the membrane and the problems there. But we used a lot of undenatured omega-6 and fats, like you mentioned, the butter, the ghee, these are saturated fats and cholesterol, which you noticed a difference. I mean, by moving to these fats that most people think are bad, these fats are actually the ones that stabilize the cell membrane.
Yeah. So I do think that the fats was a key, was a big change in him. So, I mean, he does fight me here and there on it because, you know, it's a bit unusual to be forced to eat a lot of fat, but I do incorporate a lot of fats into what I do. So if I'm cooking, so I use the Simple Mills, like they're a grain-free cake mix that you can make cupcakes with. So I add extra fats to it. So I'll add extra avocado oil. I'll add extra ghee to it just to, everything has to have a lot more fat in it. And so just really pushing that as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then getting rid of the bad fats. I mean, vegetable oils, canola oils, you go to Whole Foods, it's in everything, right? And those are the fats that really disrupt the membranes. They're polyunsaturated fats like fish oil that disrupt the cell membrane. You know, when you use some of these fats like safflower oil, sunflower oil, which are in a lot of these products, make sure they're oleic, which is basically makes them more on the mono side. It makes them tolerate heat better. So they're a safer fat. So just a little tidbit there. But we want to be, you mentioned avocado oil, very stable with heat, takes heat well. Almond oil is another one that takes heat well. So does the ghee, coconut oil. What are some other good fats that we use? Butter, you mentioned grass-fed butter.
I'll do like cold olive oil. I'll do. A little parmesan in it. So yeah.
And then using some of the nuts for things is great because nuts have, again, the omega-6 fats that a lot of people don't talk about are really important to stabilize the cell membrane. And getting those omega-6 not in vegetable oil in a really stable form is really important because all the omega-6 is adulterated. We want that stable omega-6 to help with the membrane as well as the saturated fats and cholesterol. So egg yolks have a lot of the saturated fats, cholesterol, phosphatidylcholine, you know, very important fats in that as well. So yeah, the fats are critical to add and getting rid of the bad fats for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. All right. So that, the diet became a critical role. I mean, do you have any other tips? I think the shake tip was really huge, because that's a good way to get fats. And what about just, you know, getting your kids, you know, used to other foods, you know, I mean.
So he's frightened of foods. He's a lot, I will say, getting him well, has opened up his world for food.
Yeah.
Willing to try it. I mean, I can remember a time, like, if we'd gone to a restaurant and ordered a pizza and they put any greenery anywhere, it would have been the end of the world. But, you know, recently we went to there's a keto cafe where we live, and they had the fathead pizzas, and they sprinkled it with basil, and he just sat there and just picked it off, no big deal. But he, you know, just like anybody else with, oh, I'll just take this off, I'm not going to eat it. But yeah. So I think slowly introducing it, trying it not to be threatening, I put his vegetables on a separate plate, and ask him to try it. And he's like, slowly I've been able to transition that to actually putting it on his plate. And I will say, I'm lucky, my kids are open to bribery. You know, you try this for me and I'll do this for you. And there's actually chore apps that we use, it's on the iPad, that you do this thing and then you get a star. And they love this reward system. So it's a motivator for my kids. So
I think it's a motivator for any kid. I think that's really brilliant, actually. So no doubt. All right, look, I want people to see that this is a process. You know, this is why we're training doctors. We have, you know, now many more doctors doing this process around the United States. And you spoke to that group, and very few are doing it correctly. So I'll look for cellular healing doctors for sure, because they're trained in this. But, you know, I want people to see the whole process. It's a process. It's not about one product by any means. But talk about maybe some products that were game changers for him that maybe people don't know of.
I mean, I think the Vista products that we, you know, systemic products.
Vista, yeah, that's for the cell membrane, the mitochondrial membrane and the outer membrane. Huge product for sure.
So that I saw that the PC product, that again, another fat that was, I think, a big influence on how he was.
Yeah.
General Sedate, he responded to.
Oh yeah. General Sedate. That's the systemic formulas product. It's one of their Chinese element products. I mean, Xander and others, they all seem to do really well with that product. So it's just generally for the brain, I would say for sure. But no doubt, it's just for whatever reason, I would say 90% of the kids really do well with it.
Yeah. I mean, I think that your Moore's product is excellent because of the methylated Bs. I mean, he does have MTHFR mutation. It's the 1298 SNPs. So he's key to him getting well and to support that methylation with the Moore's products.
I want one of the five R's is reestablishing methylation. And, you know, most people just give methyl tetrahydrofolate, folate B12, 21 steps around that methyl cycle. The unique thing about Moore's, it has the active ingredients, but it addresses all 21. That's why that product is important. It's huge. Glutathione, what your cell naturally gets rid of toxins, it parallels methylation. So when methylation goes down, glutathione goes down. If we can bring methylation up, we can bring glutathione up. So it's a major importance to detoxing the cell. And you're right. What toxic people, they lack methylation. Whether they have a SNP or not, they lack methylation. That's why it's hugely important.
Yeah. And I guess we have to mention then G-cell, because glutathione product. I mean, yeah, that obviously to support his detoxification. Yeah. So.
Yeah, yeah, G-cell raises glutathione, intracellular glutathione. A lot of docs are out there just trying to give glutathione. You can give glutathione, even IV, and it works kind of in the beginning, but ultimately you have to fix the glutathione cycle in the cell, and that's what G-cell does. And then, of course, bind, right? I mean, we're binding the stuff in the gut so you don't auto-intoxicate. Again, it's another huge important step in this. And then surrounding that with all the binders that we talked about, the cytodetox, the alpha lipoic acid. Yeah, so.
No, exactly. And you couldn't just say it's this one product. That's why we do a package, why it's a whole process, a holistic approach that we take.
Yeah.
And I do just want to say other things that I had already come to you doing a lot of the R1 work that you talk about, removing the source. So, you know, we have an RO system, we have a shower filter, we buy organic. I make my own product because I don't think I'd have won this battle against toxicity if I was still putting a load of environmental toxins into him. So I think that was key as well to really cleaning up your environment and taking that stress off of your body. You can at least control that.
So,
I live by R1, and when we don't, like for example, when we travel and perhaps we're affected by other things, I see a deterioration in him. You know, maybe, you know, we don't eat as well, and you know, there's other bad choices being made because of the situation we're in. I can see him go down. I can bring him back, but.
Absolutely. You know, it's like that, the bucket theory that I've talked about. You know, it's that bucket starts filling in utero, right? Your toxins, we talked about it, your lead, your mercury went into him, other chemicals, of course. And then we start the process of toxic life, vaccinations, etc. The bucket fills up. You have to stop dumping toxins into the bucket because we're going to empty the bucket. I mean, that's what this, you know, whole thing is about. Cellular detox is emptying 72 trillion cells, right? Cellular 72 trillion buckets, you know, but listen, the most important buckets are right here. You know, you've got to clear the brain. I wouldn't have got my life back if I didn't get it out of my brain. Xander wouldn't have got his life back if he didn't get out of the brain. And by the way, you're doing it too.
Exactly. So, I do a lot of the fasting that you taught me, and that was a lot of change for me, was the fasting, because what I didn't mention is my lead and my mercury were causing me to be very chemically sensitive. Mm-hmm. And I had a very hard time being around new smells, and perfume would drive me crazy if somebody came into the house with perfume on. Which I still don't like, but I can tolerate it now.
Yeah, me too. I don't like it either, but I can tolerate it.
Yeah. So I think the fasting for me was a big game changer. And I'm a big fan of the fasting. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'd already done a lot of the R1 work. I was definitely, you know, on that path anyway, but, cause I couldn't even tolerate being around harsh chemicals anyway. So,
yeah. Yeah. Well, look, yeah, it's a system, folks. You know, Elsa, I have to take my hat off to you. Number one, I know you inspired a lot of moms and dads that need inspired, you know, Xander's well, and you're not quitting by any means, nor am I. But, you know, you were willing to do it for everything. You were willing to do the extraordinary. I believe that's what it takes. I believe it's willing to step outside of the normal box, think differently. You know, people hearing, oh my gosh, fish oils can be bad. You know, it's like these oils are, you know, these fats are actually better. Step outside of the box, think different. You know, it's what we have and teach works. It's why my passion is teaching more doctors this, you know, because so few are putting this all together right. And again, from pain to purpose, you know, I had my story. Dylan had his, Xander his, and hundreds of others now. So, thanks for being here. I know you inspired many.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Thanks.
Thank you.